You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Good morning to you. It's the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio, brought to you by Mercedes-AMG Driving Perfection, along with the legend LeVar Arrington.
What's up?
Who I would guess, LeVar, this may be, I have to go back and check through the annals of all, like, fill-ins for Dan Patrick. I would think we're the only two guys to ever appear on the Dan Patrick Show as athletes and guests, and now as guest hosts.
How about that? Right? History, like, baby.
Yeah, I mean, I was on, like, once, like, as a college hooper. You were on, like, anytime they could get a hold of. Did you have a good Christmas?
It was great, man. It was good. It was relaxing. It was peaceful. I enjoyed it. A lot of fire. You know, I was looking at the fireplace quite a bit. A
lot of fire. Well, you have to say a lot of fire. You have to go. Well, I was watching the fireplace. There's something relaxing about the fireplace. By the way, if you're joining us outside of Southern
fire too. Doc.
If you're joining us outside of Southern California, you're like, okay, why are these guys talking about the weather? Because it actually poured last night, pouring rain last night. Very, very weird, which means there'll be snow in the mountains and it'll look beautiful in a couple of days. In the meantime, that's kind of what we're dealing with, which is not a big deal to anybody in the rest of the country, but to us, it's a little different. Anyway, LeVar, let's start with where we finished last night in the NFL. Coming into the season, where were you on Aaron Rodgers?
I was high on Aaron Rodgers. I actually picked the Green Bay Packers to go to the Super Bowl. I thought this would be one of those in-your-face years for Aaron Rodgers. I could just tell by his mentality after the drafting of Love. And, yeah, so I was high on him coming in.
Okay, so obviously right now you're patting yourself on the back. Like last night, so Tennessee comes in, snow game.
Yes.
And if there's one thing that is the nemesis to the Green Bay Packers, it's the team that can run the football, keep Aaron Rodgers off the field. Now, look, we saw San Francisco. It's a different style of run game. But last year in the NFC Championship game, they just dominated the game. We saw it actually twice last year when they played. A couple times this year, they've struggled to stop the run.
You got it.
How much does last night change your perception on what they can? I mean, obviously you had them going to a Super Bowl, but anyone is reasonable and like, all right, there's matchups. That does last night change anyone's perspective on the Packers?
It definitely should, because I actually had Tennessee winning the game. I felt as though their running attack with just the elements alone, even though it was in Lambeau Field, Green Bay, I felt as though Tennessee would be too physical for Green Bay. I thought that Aaron Rodgers would have a game, but I thought that Tennessee would be too physical, and by game's end, they would have worn them down, and we would have saw Tennessee, in essence, dominate them physically to get the win in what I thought would be an ugly game. But you should change the way that you're looking at this Green Bay team as a whole. Their defense proved that they could stand up under the pressure of a heavy, hard-nosed, Mike Vrabel-led team. And Aaron Rodgers is continuing to be Aaron Rodgers. He does not look like he's slowing down. He's protecting the ball. He's on some straight-up, like, body counts with the way he's playing the game. I was more impressed with what they did last night. They had three running backs. I mean, Dylan, where does he come from, right? He's like the third back on the depth chart, and I think he had the most rushing yards out of all of the Green Bay Packer backs. And Aaron Jones is the guy. I'm thinking it's an Aaron Jones, Henry matchup, and it turns out to be a Dylan, Henry matchup. So I thought it was a pretty awesome game, and you definitely have to look at the Green Bay Packers as a threat to knock off the Kansas City Chiefs if they keep playing the way that they're playing.
LeVar Arrington, Doug Gottlieb for Dan the Danettes here on the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio. Here's the thing is it's interesting. You called it at the time and said they were your team to make the Super Bowl. I called it at the time of the NFL draft. The people I talked to inside the NFL were like, the Jordan Love pick actually makes a ton of sense because he's really 2 years away from being anywhere close to ready. And There was great value in that selection. And then, you know, in the second round, well, you didn't take a wide receiver then. Well, they took A.J. Dillon. And obviously you look at the 124 and the two touchdowns yesterday, and that helps you. He hasn't had that type of season. But if you know, Aaron Jones, his contract is up. He already has, you know, Drew Rosenhaus is now his representation, which that happened like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Anyone who knows, like, look, Drew is a very good agent. His job is simply to get his client the most money. And I think most people think he's not getting the most money in Green Bay. At least traditionally, that's how that franchise outside of with their quarterbacks rolls. Mm-hmm. So this is further confirmation that franchise gets it. And while people may say, well, they drafted a guy who's not even playing, I do think there's a benefit of it does motivate Aaron Rodgers, right? Like a motivated Aaron Rodgers is a good Aaron Rodgers. Like, he's better when he's uncomfortable, when people rattle him a little bit. But I don't think that's the only reason they drafted him. I think you look at Roethlisberger, at Philip Rivers, at Drew Brees, and at some point, Father Time's going to catch up with you, and they're not saying it's right now. They're saying we got to prepare in the next couple of years for the eventuality of that. And if not, Jordan still has a great – he's still going to have value of a first-round pick to turn around and trade it because no one's actually seen him play, right? Like, Jordan Love right now is still a brand-new car. As long as no one drives him off the lot, he retains most of his value. Now, the second somebody drives him off the lot, he throws a pick, like, final week of the season. Next week, he goes and gets in. I don't think they'll even let him get in. But once he plays, that could change it. I got it. I understood it. And I think a lot of people in the NFL did as well. And, you know, maybe Devontae Adams. I mean, how does – you got to help me out. You were a great defense player. How is Devontae Adams always open? And he's sometimes not even open and Rodgers throws him open. How is it possible one guy can be so incredibly dominant and a team cannot stop him?
Well, you unloaded a lot right just then. I'll start with Devontae. I think his footwork is probably the best in the game. Between him and DeAndre Hopkins with his route running ability, I just think the understanding of how to use his feet, the development of skill with Devontae is phenomenal. And it, you know, when you have a little bit of time and a player has an opportunity to exercise their body control and their movement and their footwork, it's amazing to watch because they always seem like they're open. Travis Kelce is a lot like that as well. He just keeps moving his feet. He keeps finding the pockets and the holes in the defenses, and they just have a great relationship with the guys that are delivering the ball to them. So it's really something that it's like effort. You think of Rip Hamilton, right? And people are like, why is Rip Hamilton always open and available to shoot those threes? You know why? Because his footwork, his movement, his willing to outwork the defender was what gave him a real opportunity to get to that swing, run through the low pick, get to that edge, get the ball, bam, and deliver a shot. So I feel the same way about some of these guys like Devontae Adams and Travis Kelce. But when you look at the draft and what you said about, you know, Love and people feeling as though that was a great move and it makes sense because maybe in 2 years, this, that, and the other. Well, I look at it a little differently. When I look at Aaron Rodgers was not motivated by them not taking the pick and using it on someone else and using it on a quarterback. I think Aaron Rodgers was motivated by the fact that he already was dealing with issues coming out of the Mike McCarthy era and going into the LaFleur era and what that looked like in season one. So a lot of people felt as though the relationship would deteriorate so quickly between the new coach and Aaron Rodgers because of Aaron Rodgers' quirky personality. But in fact, they were one game away from making it to the Super Bowl.
Right.
So then now you're saying, oh, well, they have no talent, da-da-da, this, that, and the other. They got to get another guy. They don't have enough weapons. There's some question marks on the defensive side of the ball. You didn't address directly a need for your team. And so when you look at conventional wisdom as it's historically connected to top draft picks, round one draft picks, you don't use a number one draft pick on a guy you're not going to use. That's just rule of thumb. That's like
wait, that's what the Green Bay Packers did. That's how they got Aaron Rodgers. There's a similarity there.
It's not a wise decision to you when you are that close to being a Super Bowl contending team and you know you have immediate needs you need to fill. You bring in a guy that can contribute to your team immediately.
They're not drafting in the top five or the top ten of the draft.
But it's first round. It's first round. What was it? 20 what?
Well, they moved up, I think, to 24.
24. You know who was still on the board when they took him?
Who?
DK Metcalf. Like, think about that.
No,
like,
DK Metcalf was the year before.
Was it the year before?
Yeah, DK Metcalf. He's not a rookie, right? So, yeah, so.
Right. Well, no, hold on.
They could have.
Yes. I'm off. There was a receiver. I'm off on the receiver.
No, what's his name from with the Cincinnati Bengals was available. T. Higgins was available. So, and T. Higgins is having a great year with Cincinnati.
But
guess what? The Green Bay Packers are going to have home field advantage in the playoffs. Okay, they won 13 games, actually 14 if you count the playoffs last year. It's like we're sitting here Monday morning quarterbacking. No rookie. You know, could a wide receiver have helped? Like, I guess, but that would have meant, Marquez Valdez-Scantling gets less reps.
Could you have gotten a defender? Could you have gotten somebody who was going to make your team better?
Yes, potentially. I think defense is a place of need, okay? But, I mean, like, look, is there defense better this year than it was last year?
It's around the same.
Okay. Is there offense that much better than it was last year? We're sitting here going, they could have been better. They're going to have the number one seed in the NFC. How much better could they have been?
I do not disagree with your reasoning, but what I will say is you don't know what you're lacking until you get to that moment of truth of where a team does what the San Francisco 49ers were able to do to them in the NFC Championship game.
No question, but is one defensive player at the end of the first round
possibly
enough to change that?
I mean, yes. Yes, I would say yes. You know, when you look at the ability of some of these young guys that are coming out later in the drafts, maybe even early second round guys, they are much more equipped to have immediate impacts on teams, and we're seeing that. And listen, at the 22nd pick, 20s in the 20s altogether, early 20s to mid 20s, there are still some game changing talents at that space. For me, I'm not splitting kings in a blackjack game, Doug. Like I'm just not. I'm going to stay with the 20s. I'm not going to split them because that's what the book says to do. And even though they may have had that moment where they took Aaron Rodgers while they still had Brett Favre and they took him with a first-round draft pick, I understand that now you have enough of a backstory to say, well, we can justify doing it.
Yeah, yes.
But I think the reality that exists here is it was offensive to Aaron Rodgers. It was offensive to the players on the staff. It was offensive to the fans. It was offensive. And if it's offensive, you got to address it. And it can't just be left at, well, Aaron Rodgers plays better when he's uncomfortable. I think that when you look at the dynamic of how this could have played out, if you don't have Aaron Rodgers handle things the way that he did, things could have fell off of a cliff, right? The worst thing a coach can do is lose belief from his players. You don't want to do that. Like, you look at what happened in Houston. That team is still, personnel-wise, they still have pretty much the entire type of team that got Bill O'Brien to the point of where he was able to take control of making decisions for the team, and they fell apart. And they fell apart because the decision-making with the DeAndre Hopkins deal, I think that was the nail in the coffin. But to put yourself in a position where you could lose – the buy-in and the belief of the most important piece to your team. I mean, you tell me. That's got to be one of the most tremendous risks that this organization has taken, probably since taking Aaron Rodgers. So on the flip side, it's a good thing because it's working out. But in the immediate, I didn't think that it was a great idea.
All right, that's LeVar Arrington. By the way, this is Aaron Rodgers talking about the Packers and where they are right now.
I feel good about where we're at. It's tough to play in the cold. You know, it's tough to play in Lambeau. I think we proved that tonight. Thought the defense played outstanding. Offensively, we had great balance. You know, we ran the hell out of the ball. Guys were great up front, really good in the protection, and then Devontae did what Devontae's been doing.
That's Aaron Rodgers. We're going to talk about playing in the cold because everybody, if you're gonna win the NFC, you're gonna go through two places now. You go through Arrowhead, and you're gonna go through Green Bay. We'll talk about that as the show goes on. But
thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app.
All right, let's bring in a guy who's a legend. If you know anything about Steeler football, you know Ed Bichette because he's covered the team since 85, now covers them for The Athletic. He's kind enough to spend some time with us here on the Dan Patrick Show with LeVar Arrington. I'm Doug Gottlieb. And Ed, it's 24-7. It ain't looking good. They still can't run the football. And then Ben Roethlisberger kind of rediscovers what everyone had thought was he was lost was his ability to throw the football down the field and do so accurately. How important was yesterday's comeback win in your mind as a guy who's covered this team for the better part of the last 4 decades?
Doug, it was big for many reasons, the biggest Big Ben. You know, people were questioning his arm, questioning whether he had enough time to throw. And I think he answered a lot of those yesterday. We've been watching him all season. I saw nothing wrong with his arm other than maybe a lack of accuracy that he has had before. And they're a mysterious refusal to throw the intermediate and deep routes. You know, they kept going to that short stuff even when it was being slammed right back in their faces. And yesterday in the second half, all of a sudden they go, boom! And you know, you won't see a better throw than that 39-yard touchdown pass he threw Johnson.
I mean, like,
50
listen,
yards in the air.
Oh, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, we saw him last night. I mean, his accuracy is ridiculous. But, I mean, Ben threw a couple balls, which are like, holy, where's this been all year?
it's like they decided before the season that he's coming off elbow surgery. He's 38 years old. We have to protect him. And we're going to do that by throwing a lot of short passes. And they were working early on, but then defenses adjusted. And not only did they adjust, they ganged up on the line of scrimmage. And that not only stopped those short passes, it stopped the run. They were batting his passes down at the line of scrimmage because they knew they were going to come out quick and they weren't going to get to him. So they put their hands up. Mm-hmm. But yesterday you could just see the defense loosen up once he started hitting those longer ones. And it doesn't have to be 50 yards. You know, he hadn't been throwing the 25, 30-yard ones with any consistency. Now it opens up everything for them, I think.
Ed, you mentioned something very important there with what you just said. It loosened the defense up. A lot of the observations I've had watching Ben is his ability to extend plays and have the strength to deliver the ball downfield with that strong arm. I think it's more so his escapability at this point that has to be more in question. When you look at some of the things that he has to do, I feel as though he has maybe masked at times that he hasn't been protected as well as he could be with his ability to lengthen plays. Is that possibly a pinpoint of why maybe this late struggle, or as I said earlier, out of rhythm as an offense could be, you know, what's taking place? The defenses have been tight. They've been coming. They've been aggressive. And it's thrown off the rhythm.
You can see it. You could see it earlier. Even in the first half, LeVar, yesterday, he wasn't following through. He wasn't stepping into his throws. The one throw he was really bad. He threw off his back foot. You know, they're just going to have to go back to, you know, dial it back to it's 2018 if you have to, when he was leading the league in everything. And just, you know, have him do more of that. If you can't protect him, well, then you can't protect him. But you're not going to win throwing 3-yard passes all day. Defenses aren't going to let you.
Hmm. Ed Bichette joining us from The Athletic, covering the Pittsburgh Steelers. If you know anything about Pittsburgh Steelers football, you know Ed Bichette is no one questions his sources, his opinions, because he's seen all the good and some of the bad from the Steelers since 1985. Ed, thanks so much for joining us. I got to get to the defense, because as LeVar pointed out, I mean, look, they lost Devin Bush early on in the season. Then you lose Bud Dupree, and suddenly what was a dynamic pass rush feels kind of ordinary. I know we want to give a ton, rightfully, of the credit to the offense for coming back and throwing the ball down the field. But did you see anything from the defense which gave you more hope after some lackluster performances since Dupree went down for the season?
Yeah, Doug, you know, Alex Highsmith's a rookie, a third-round pick from Coastal Carolina, and he has replaced Bud Dupree. You weren't expecting a whole lot out of him because he's a rookie, third-round pick, hasn't played, you know, all that stuff. But I thought he's been coming on a little bit, and I thought he had a really good game. He had a lot of pressures on Phillip Rivers yesterday, and that would be a big plus for them, because they weren't only missing those two you mentioned. The guy who replaced Bush, Robert Spillane, he's out to the end of the year with a knee injury. Vince Williams missed a couple games on COVID. He's their big run stopper inside. They were losing people. They lost Joe Hayden for a game because of a concussion up in Buffalo, and that hurt them. I know all teams have injuries, but, they have lost two of their best in Bush and Dupree, but there's still a good enough defense, I think, that if the offense produces, you know, they were scoring 24 points at least every game until they hit this skid, and then they couldn't get 20. If they produce, it's a good enough defense. Still is.
Ed, I want to take one more question on the offensive side of the ball, and more specifically about Juju Smith-Schuster. I'm from Pittsburgh, so I get how we are as fans. We could be the most loyalist fan, probably the best fan base in all of sports. Some may say Dallas. I don't get it, but it is what it is. But we can also be the biggest detractors once we're turned off. And looking at some of the things that, you know, maybe Juju has been beloved for, almost turned into a distraction and a maligning, and I can't even imagine how some of the old heads, the football purists in Western Pennsylvania, view dancing on logos before the game and doing TikTok videos. I mean, it's got to have, you know, coaching legends on all levels in the area, you know, pulling their hair out and just making sure they're messaging their players saying that this isn't how it's done. But yet and still, Juju Smith Schuster is a very, very bright spot for that team. Just tell me, how much has that played a part in maybe, you know, how this offense is being looked at? And do you think that he has, you know, since coming out saying he's going to stop doing that, do you think that he understood the elements of what that may have been bringing and causing for them to be able to compete in the game?
I think Mike Tomlin explained that to him this past week. LeVar, he had a talk with him, and then Juju said he wasn't going to do it anymore. It didn't go over well here, but he's still a popular player here. You know, he's a tough, tough kid. He reminds me a little bit, and this, I'm not being original here, of the way Hines Ward played.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, he will fight for extra yards. He'll bang his head into others if he has to get those yards. He's a good receiver, catching the ball. He's not anymore an explosive guy like he was his first couple years when Antonio Brown was on the other side and they were ignoring Juju. Mm-hmm. But he's a good possession guy, and he is still very popular here. He's done a lot of things here in the community and everything that. And I think people are overlooking that now that he stopped it.
Okay.
Yeah. He pick up $25,000 in people's layaways. Like, he does so many.
Right.
He has so much positive equity that I don't think it doesn't come from a place of malice, right? That he's like, I'm actually, Ed, more interested in, you know, I look at the Steelers and, you know, they were very hesitant to use an early pick to get the heir apparent to Ben, right? Ben pushed back against him. They drafted Mason Rudolph, who, like, I'm an Oklahoma State alum. I love Mason, the guy. I didn't think he was going to be good enough, and to this point, he doesn't look like he is. But I look at Pittsburgh and their inability to – James Conner has been good but hasn't been as good this year, not all his fault, and he's been banged up. I look at Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh is the reason why Green Bay did what they did, right? That they had to get a guy for when Aaron Rodgers loses it, because at some point he will, and they had to get a guy for if Aaron Jones wants too much money, just like James Conner, they have an A.J. Dillon. Is that a fair parallel to say, if you look at Pittsburgh, that's why Green Bay did what they did?
Yes and no. I will come back at you like this, Doug. What if I was going to say Favre, because they have a history. You know, they got Aaron when they had Favre.
Go ahead.
What if Aaron plays another 3 or 4 years? And that's
okay, so you trade him.
Free agent.
So you trade him.
But
it never loses value.
You do lose your value, though.
No.
I meant to address that. You do lose your value. Because
No, listen. Listen, guys, stick with me on this for a second. I understand what you're saying. Like, okay, maybe you – but, like, Josh Rosen lost his value because Josh Rosen played. If he doesn't play, right – No one knows if he can play. And by the way, the Green Bay Packers are never going to get in. They're not going to get, as long as they have Aaron Rodgers, not going to be in a top 10 drafting. They're just not, right? So all the best quarterbacks. And Jordan Love was seen as a developmental prospect, right? He's not losing his value. He's always going to be worth a late first round draft pick. I don't think you lose any value in it.
As long as you don't drive
that car off the lot, it still has value.
I would disagree. You drove him off when you drafted him. But go ahead.
If Aaron's been, you know, one of the great iron men of the game. If he doesn't play, how's anybody going to assess his value? You know, when it comes to that. But the Steelers had a long drought between Bradshaw and Ben, and I'm sure they don't want that to happen again.
Right.
But on the other hand, they keep drafting. You know, the 20s, late 20s in the first round. They did move up to get Devin Bush 2 years ago. But I don't know that sometimes you just can't plan on those things. You know, the Patriots didn't look like they planned for Brady's exit, and it didn't look like they planned.
No, they did. They did, and then Tom Brady is like, him or me, right? That actually is the perfect parallel, right? They had Jimmy Garoppolo. They had the heir apparent. And when they could have made the move then, Brady was playing so well that they then moved him. And they could have gotten a little bit maybe more value on it now, obviously, because of when and how they dealt him. But that's actually the perfect parallel. Like, they were prepared for this eventuality. They just didn't have the support of the ownership to make that move. And it won one more Super Bowl because of it.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, there's many ways.
The value's in the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it was the wrong decision. I'm just saying that if we're looking for parallels in organizations that have been able to sustain success, the Steelers, when they lost Bradshaw, you know, I mean, they had the Bubby Brister years and the Tommy Maddox years and Cordell Stewart, they made it work with a slash for a couple years. Like, they were constantly searching for a quarterback to go with outstanding defenses and rosters, and then they finally found one with Ben Roethlisberger. And whereas the Packers, they haven't had the drop-off with Favre, with Aaron Rodgers, and they're just repeating that. And you look around the league, or you even look at Pittsburgh, what a great organization. But, when Ben Roethlisberger wasn't playing well, there's no heir apparent. There's nobody in the pipeline. And the second he retires, they're back in kind of quarterback purgatory.
You know what, Doug? I would say if you look around at all the NFL teams, the ones with good quarterbacks, there's very few heir apparents behind them. Really, there really isn't. It just doesn't happen anymore with free agency and everything else. And it's a tough thing to do. And then there's many ways to skin that cat. You know, you can try a trade, draft, a free agency. I remember when the 49ers got Steve Young in a trade. Did they get lucky or did they get smart? We pointed out the Packers, but I don't know that there's very many teams around the league where there's a great quarterback and someone behind them ready to step in. Now it looks like maybe San Diego is one of those teams that has done it.
Last thing, Ed Bichette joining us from the Athletic.
LA Chargers. Yeah.
It's fine. I live in LA. Nobody calls me LA Chargers. last thing, does yesterday's win give you whether it's hopes or does it change your perspective on whether or not this team can get to a Super Bowl?
Oh, very much so, Doug. I mean, everybody was down here. You just couldn't understand, like I said, why they kept doing that offense the way they were doing it. And they kept doing it in the first half yesterday. I do a discussion while the game's going on the Athletic with fans, and there were many of them said, "Put Mason in." I mean, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah,
no.
But yeah.
No,
yeah,
we saw that last year. No, don't do that.
That didn't come against the Jaguars. It came against a good Colts team, like you mentioned, and they'll rest guys now in Cleveland, and the next time you see their first team will be in the first game of the playoffs. And I think it bode well for them what they did yesterday.
Ed Bichette writes for The Athletic. Obviously, you can chat with him during games. He's just an absolute legend. At Ed Bichette on Twitter as well. Ed, you're the best. Happy New Year to you, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks, Doug, and that yinzer you got with you.
Nice, that's right. Nice. Appreciate you.
Very much a term of endearment.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
This is the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio alongside LeVar Arrington. I'm Doug Gottlieb. Welcome in. Hope you had a great Christmas. You're ready for a safe and healthy new year. It's one of those 2021 can't end quickly enough for so many people. LeVar, let's continue with the football discussion, and let's go to your former team, the Washington football team. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Dwayne Haskins had an interesting week, right? Interesting week.
Very interesting.
Where, yes, he was at a gentleman's club.
They said he was hanging out with Doug Gottlieb.
Yes. He was and
y'all was making it rain.
And here's the thing about gentlemen's clubs, right?
You got to
be a
gentleman.
You either are or you're not a strip club guy.
That is
right?
True. That's very true.
Right.
I'm not either.
And it's not because I don't want these lovely and talented women to go to medical school, as they're clearly all trying to save money for. It's just like, I don't know. It's not my jam, you know? I'm not saying I haven't partaken in the past.
Right.
It's just not somebody when I look at the bottom line of my bank account, I don't think that a smattering of ones to a young lady is how I want to spend my good hard-earned money. Again, I'm not a moralist. You're allowed to do what you're allowed to do, but it's different during a pandemic when the rest of the league is depending upon all of these guys that just go home and let's just get to where we are 2 weeks away.
Yes.
And maybe three if you're the Washington football team. 3 weeks away from being able to go to any gentleman's club anywhere in America or in a different country, however you want. So Haskins got the start because Alex Smith wasn't healthy. And Haskins has done a lot of good things in terms of throwing his support around Alex Smith in this incredible comeback story.
It's the best thing he's done since
being on
the team.
No question.
Most impactful thing he's done since being on the team.
So yesterday he played poorly. He got replaced by Taylor Heinicke, who, if you didn't know, like, here's a guy who's bounced around. He was a backup in Carolina. All things point back to Ron Rivera trying to figure out somebody who knows their offense and bring him in from Carolina, as several of the backups have been from the Carolina Panthers. Anyway, this Haskins after the game, he was asked about his mental state and he said, "Definitely the hardest week of my life. I just want to bounce back and move forward and pray and get my life together. I really can't put into words how I'm feeling right now. You sign up for this job, so it is what it is. Sometimes being a human being isn't enough. You got to own up to your responsibilities and mistakes and put your best foot forward and pray for an opportunity. You never know when you'll get another one." You've not only been a great college football player and a great NFL player, but you've been a member of the Washington football team. When I say Dwayne Haskins, as of today, what do you think?
I think it's trending the wrong direction. And he said all the right things when he spoke, right? But somebody needs to wrap their arms around Dwayne, and Dwayne has to be open enough to accept some very, very harsh and stern criticisms and words. He has to adjust, and he has to adjust quickly because his value is plummeting. And plummeting in the way where not only will it make it difficult for him to maintain a roster spot with the Washington football team, it's going to make it difficult for him to get a roster spot with any National Football League team. And that's something that when you hear a guy speak the way that he spoke and giving an account of what he's feeling and what he's going through, they lost that game the weekend that he went to the strip club, right? Gentlemen's club. They lost. You become the starter, and in the week that you lose a game as the starter, being back as the starter, then you risk it to do that, and then you get your captainship stripped up from you going into a very, very critical game this past weekend, and you still play at a level that is so poor that your words could mean something more if your actions were more. So the fact that your actions were, you did not want to speak to the media after the game. You just left. They had to find you. Then you had to give whatever it was going to be that you were saying. Now, on one side, you'll say he needed time to cool off. Maybe he was going to say some things he didn't need to say. He said all the right things when he finally spoke. But, Doug, you are the quarterback of the Washington football team. And there's a tremendous responsibility, a tremendous expectation that comes with being that to the fan base. And the things that he could have done to help himself out, the things he could have done to garner support from his teammates, he doesn't do.
Right.
He doesn't do those things. And so I think the level of trust, the level of belief, the idea that he understands the level and magnitude of what his accountability to the team and to himself has to be the player that he wants to be or needs to be, sure. It makes me question, does he want to play? Do you even want to be a football player in the National Football League? I know you want all of the things that go with it, like to be able to be important when you go to the club.
Right.
But do you really want to be a football player, you know, in the National Football League? It doesn't match up for me.
Well, look, I do think there's a couple of things. I think Urban Meyer kind of called it. I mean, without saying, he never questioned Haskins' talent, although I would, based upon the scouts I talked to, there's a lot of he just has bad feet. And, you know, no matter how talented your arm is in the National Football League, especially now, like if you got bad feet, I mean, there's definitely a premium set, not just on the Lamars of the world in terms of with your feet and running for a first down, but, you know, pocket agility he just didn't have and pocket awareness he just didn't have. But more than anything, there's just a level of maturity, even with even in how he's handling this. Right. Like, look, man, to err is human. OK, should he go into a strip club, win, lose, whatever? Like, no, of course you shouldn't have. But it's the woe is me. You know, I'm just a human being, like, bro, that ain't it. That ain't it. And I don't actually care about what the fans think. OK, because the fans, it's what the players think. As we discussed earlier with Jalen Hurts, like, you ain't going anywhere unless the guys in that locker room buy in. And when you do something dumb, like most of those guys would be like, all right, I'm pissed because he risks our season. He risks my livelihood, but you better go in there and ball out, right? You better go in there and you better walk in, own a huddle. And he just doesn't. And this is just a case of nobody wants to hear this, but like, look, sometimes just because they'll draft you in the first round doesn't mean you go. It doesn't mean you go. Jim Calhoun used to tell his guys that all the time. Like, he would say, it's not about the first contract, it's about the second contract, right?
Right.
And it's true, because you get in there, and your first-round pick, they're going to throw you in before you're ready. And if you can't swim out of the deep end, you better give those guys, those 53, 52 other eyes, reason to believe that, no, he's a dude, he's got this under control. And there's almost nothing this guy has done that shows he's ready for the job. Even last year when they won, and he's taking a selfie with a fan instead of taking a knee at the end of the game. Like, guys realize this. Guys are like, yo, this, he is.
He's about other things. His focus isn't where it needs to be, Doug.
Right. Which I understand that if you're driving and you're listening to us, LeVar Arrington, Doug Gottlieb, Dan Patrick show, you're like, look, they're professional, they're men. Like, no, but a quarterback affects all those other guys. They all want to make more money. They all want to win games. And when you're not about just those two things, making everybody money and winning games, then they're not about you, right? Is that a fair and accurate portrayal of what it's really like inside an NFL locker room?
I mean, yeah, it is. Here's the thing, Doug. These guys could have locked up a playoff position, a playoff spot, with a win.
Yes.
So when you look at... I'm never...
And it wasn't like they're playing the 85 Bears, right? They're playing... Right. And they're playing their coach's old team. Like, you don't think... He wants,
without their best player.
Right. You don't think that Ron Rivera wants to kick the Carolina Panthers' ass? I understand it's as amicable divorce as there has ever been. Like, Ron Rivera got his own football team to run, to find the nickname of. He gets to pick the GM. He's going to get to pick the players. Like, it worked out really well for Ron Rivera, right? And Matt Rhule, a guy who comes in from college, gets a chance, plenty of time to prove himself, right? Like, but there is, Ron Rivera is a competitor. Right, he's a former football player. He is a competitive head coach. He wants to kick their ass. He can go to the playoffs and beat his old franchise, and that's how you play. Like, I can't think of a more disastrous end to this story than what played out this past week.
Doug, they stripped him of his captainship going into this game. Think about that. Now you have the ability to lead this team as the most important position on the field going into this game against Carolina, which is a very winnable game, and you could solidify that I may not have been perfect,
right,
but I dang sure delivered on this. And you get your captaincy stripped away from you. You have a defense that's playing out of their minds right now. And to think that this is the way that people view you, like, bro, let me tell you something. That probably was the nail in the coffin, if you ask me. And I've used the term quite a few times during this show. I don't know why I'm living on that one, but I really believe that sealed his fate. Is that for you to be as high profile a player and draft pick as you were for this team, for the guy who was before Ron Rivera, Gruden, to say, I did not like this dude. He wasn't my guy. I never liked this guy. He's not that good. To continue to show reasons why the focal point of his failure should be on him versus something else. Yeah. That is, I mean, what do you do where you're, I don't like taking negative stances, and I don't like having negative opinions about guys, because I always try to find the positive in what's taking place.
Yes.
But this spells dismissive. It spells narcissistic. It to me, I would be, if I'm Coach Ron Rivera, knowing what we have at stake and he's my quarterback, I'm just mortified. I'm mortified. I'm disappointed that this is what I have to try to ride out the season. We go from clawing and crawling back into a race to try to get the NFC East divisional crown, to get into the playoffs, and because of Alex Smith going down, I have to deal with Dwayne Haskins being my quarterback, and I have zero belief that we can get it done with him. That's got to be a very, very hopeless feeling for the coach and the coaching staff, and that's on him. That is totally on him. That's not on somebody else in this particular situation. That falls squarely on the shoulders of Dwayne Haskins.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
All right, if you go back a couple, you go back 2 weeks ago, right? Steelers looked like they were going to be a one and done in the playoffs. Jalen Hurts looked like he was the answer in Philadelphia. And the New York Jets were destined to not win a game, draft Trevor Lawrence, trade away Sam Darnold, and begin a completely new football trajectory. But oh, how football changes within 2 weeks, right?
Right.
You fire Greg Williams as defensive coordinator, and you can't go casino blitz and just give away a game like they did against the Raiders. In fact, the Jets have now won two games in a row, which changes things, I would think. But LeVar Arrington, I'm Doug Gottlieb. Let's welcome in Brian Costello. He works for the New York Post. He covers the New York Jets. And Brian, what do you make of this late season turnaround by the Jets?
It's remarkable, guys, because they've been so terrible all year. We were talking about them being one of the worst teams of all time. When you looked at the numbers, yes, their point differential and the way their offense has performed, and now not only have they won two games, they beat two teams that are fighting for the playoffs.
Exactly.
So it's crazy. It just shows you, like what you just said, things change quickly in the NFL, and it's hard to predict how things are going to go.
How do you view a team that where something changes as quickly? I mean, is that fool's gold? Like, how are you guys viewing it?
Yeah, it's fool's gold. I mean, I covered baseball for a long time, and they always said don't pay attention to September baseball because the call-ups and how different it gets. And I think the same thing applies when a team is out of it, playing in December in the NFL. Like, this doesn't save Adam Gase's job. He's going to get fired next week. I don't think Sam Darnold has gone three games without a turnover for the first time in his career, and it's being talked about like it's an amazing accomplishment here, but when you actually look at it, he threw for 175 yards yesterday, completed 50% of his passes. He's still, he's the guy who we've seen for 3 years. We kind of know what he is. Now, the Darnold evaluation is a little trickier because there's no Trevor Lawrence now, and you love Justin Fields, you love Zach Wilson. I think there is a decision to be made there for the Jets if Sam Darnold maybe is a guy you keep for another year instead of those guys, but in terms of evaluating Sam Darnold, this doesn't really change anything.
It's okay. Let's work our way back to Darnold. Let's start with Adam Gase. Any thought that he holds on to his job?
No, I don't think there's a chance.
Okay, so now all of a sudden it gets to who the head coach is and what he thinks of Sam Darnold, right? You have a you have a general manager. He's got three first round picks. And he has Sam Darnold under a rookie contract, but then, of course, you got to make the decision on the fifth year. You can let him play it out as is. In your mind, what's it? Joe Douglas becomes the wild card here. He keeps the job. He hires his coach. Who do you think is most likely to be on that short list?
Yeah, I think Joe Douglas is going to be here. He's going to be the GM, and he's going to be the one hiring the coach. I think, I think he's going to be pretty open to interviewing a lot of different people, and I think the names, the top names you've heard, Eric Bieniemy, Brian Daboll for the Bills, Matt Campbell, the Iowa State coach, I think we'll get a look. Wink Martindale, the defense coordinator from Baltimore, Joe Douglas has strong roots with the Ravens, so I think he'll probably get a look. But I think they're going to do a lot of interviews, and I think the way it's set up, guys, with the world we're living in right now, they could do like 12 Zoom interviews next week and then figure out four or five guys that they want to come to the building and have like longer interviews with. So I think it might be a longer process with the interviews, and I don't think they're going into this with a preconceived idea of who they want. And the Darnold question is going to be a big one, I think, in the interviews. And there's a financial component, too. They're not going to pick up his fifth-year option. It's just too much money, so I think they'll let him play out next year. But then you're going to have to pay him in 2022, and you have to decide, is this a guy that you think, even if he has a good year next year, you're going to want to pay? So that's going to be an interesting part, and to see what the coach thinks of him. There's a lot of people who still think highly of Sam Darnold. The draft wasn't that long ago. He's only 23. And there's a lot of people who argue, well, he hasn't been coached well. He hasn't had good receivers. He hasn't had a good offensive line. And all that stuff is true. Well, I just haven't seen enough from Sam Darnold watching every game he's played to make me believe that he's a guy that's going to be special in this league. And, my line with Sam Darnold has become, you can win with Sam. I don't think you're going to win because of him.
I find it so hard to believe with how difficult it is for guys to get jobs, like super, super gifted people who understand scouting, understand coaching, development, game planning. don't get jobs, and we talk about it so much at such length, but we get into situations where we have conversations about how poorly a guy is underdeveloped, how poorly the coaching has been, how poorly the selection of players have been, or what are you going to do? What's the philosophy of the team? First off, how do you mess up so bad where there could actually be so much of that type of a conversation connected to a pro team? And then my second part to that question would be, what is New York looking at? What are the Jets internally from your perspective? What are they trying to create in terms of culturally speaking with their team? Because that seems to be they're having an identity crisis with the New York Jets.
Yeah, and it's sort of a chicken and the egg thing. Does culture come from winning, or does winning come from culture? Because the Jets have been on this treadmill now for 10 years. The end of their ex-Ryan era wasn't good. The Todd Bowles era was mostly not good except for 1 year, and the Adam Gase era hasn't been good. And they drafted terribly. That's where it starts in my mind. If you look at it, the core of this team should come from those drafts of 2015, 2016, 2017, right, with guys sprinkled in from the last years. They have no one on this team from 2015 draft. They have one person on this team from 2016 and one person from 2017. That, the two guys out of those three drafts, that's a killer. They just haven't drafted well. They've made terrible decisions also in free agency. Throwing a lot of money at Trumaine Johnson was a disaster a few years ago. They paid Muhammad Wilkerson. That didn't work out. So that's where it starts. And in terms of culture, Lamar, I think it's a good point. Every coach that's been here, Rex, Bowles, Gase, talked about establishing a culture and hasn't been able to really do it. Rex sort of did it for a few years and then lost it. When you go to teams like the Ravens or the Steelers or the Patriots, there's kind of understood what it means to be a member of those teams. There's no definition of what it means to be a Jet, and there's no older players here passing that down. The longest tenured Jet got here in 2016, so there's no one that kind of teaches the younger players this is the way you go about your business as a professional. This is what it means to be a member of this organization. I think it's a long road to get there because I don't think the Jets are close to that. They don't have guys that are going to be part of this team for a long time, many of them. Mekhi Becton's pretty good. Quinnen Williams is pretty good. I think those guys will be here for a while. But Joe Douglas has to work on that. He has to bring better players in here and a good coach. And then I think you start establishing a culture, and maybe in 4 or 5 years they can have that.
That's a long time.
Four or five. Well, look, you have those three first round picks, right? So, I mean,
they have two first round picks this year, two first round this year, two first round next year.
All right. The great thing is, if you don't need a quarterback, if you decide, hey, we don't need a quarterback this year, somebody else does, there's still going to be a tremendous amount of value on that first round pick. And you can flip that into, picks later on in the draft, which is where the real value is, where you load up on either late first or you second round and third round picks. And that's how you replenish your wide receiving core. That's how you continue to fix that offensive line. That's how you give your new coach a chance to kind of build whatever that new culture is. The big question is, who is that coach and what does he think? And what does Joe Douglas really think of Sam Darnold? That's kind of where we are, correct?
Yeah, that and the number two pick is going to have a lot of value if one of these quarterbacks kind of rises up the board. Right now it feels like it's Trevor Lawrence and then a lot of question marks, but we've seen how the draft works.
Guys, yeah, I mean, look, the Josh Allen.
Value,
yeah, I mean, you look at Josh Allen. You look at what's happened with the Chargers, and you start to go like, all right, these guys they're ready to play. They can play right away. You talk yourself into something because in previous drafts, even recently, young quarterbacks have been able to show a tremendous amount of immediate return on the investment, which is going to make somebody needs a quarterback. Plenty of teams need a quarterback, and somebody's going to reach even if they know there's a massive drop off after Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and that might be the way Joe Douglas goes. Like what you said, the more picks, the better. They have 9 picks right now going into the draft. And they need, I call this a Noah's Ark offseason. They need two of everything. I mean, people talk about the Cleveland Browns yesterday not having the wide receivers. I kind of chuckled. I said, all right, name me the Jets secondary. Go ahead. They were playing guys who had no business being on an NFL field. So,
And they won!
And they won, but it was like the people have been like, oh, the Browns have no receivers. Well, the Jets have had no cornerbacks all season, so that was an even match. But, you know, they need, like, you can go through the list. They have a left tackle. They have a defensive tackle. They might have a wide receiver in Denzel Mims. Other than that, they need everything, you know. So Joe Douglas knows he has to restock this. So trading number two pick could be appealing if they feel like, A, keep Sam Darnold, or B, you draft the quarterback a little bit later than number two. Maybe you move down four or five spots and take a quarterback there. That could happen too.
All right.
Well, it's going to be interesting. Hey, Brian, happy New Year to you. Hope you had you've had a great holiday season, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, buddy.
Brian Costello, Jets beat reporter for the New York Post. It's always at least entertaining, even if it's not good football.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com. Or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.